Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Eighth Man, hope I get to call in soon. I'd love to be on the Drunk Tank segment. The calls you've had so far have been, I don't know, cute, but there's no delicate way to put it. I pooped in a grandfather clock, so get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Yeah, thank you. I should tell you guys, Cleveland coming up this Thursday at the Agora Theater. I'll be doing my stand-up show there. And then Detroit, Royal Oak. Well, I told you about that. I'll be giving Ford a piece of my mind on behalf of Cena. And then off to the Royal Oak this Friday. That'll be the 18th. Still some tickets left for the second show in Portland. That'll be June 9th. Diane Farr is our guest. She is one of my favorites. The TV show Splitting Up Together, Tuesday nights, 9:30 on ABC, where the seventh episode will air tonight as you hear this show. And I've heard it just got picked up for a second season.
It did. It did. Thanks for having me. Which is not supposed to be the goal, but somehow like turns into the goal once you're going and running, right?
Well, you know, the attrition, I mean, the thing about a TV show, if you a sitcom, especially a network sitcom, this is single camera. But if you take the odds from I'm writing a pilot, then they like the pilot, then we're shooting the pilot, then we've shot the pilot, and now the pilot has made it to the air, and then getting to the second season pickup is just astronomical that people don't understand those odds.
Okay, this is how astronomical it is. We're the only show coming back.
Wow.
So if you go all the way back to that development season, they develop 100 comedies.
Right.
And each one of those people are paid like a nice amount of money to write a show. And then maybe 8 of them get a pilot and 3 of them get on the air, and you're put on the air at a weird time. So we had this tiny pickup and you don't really have enough time to run your characters. So the writers are working so hard to get enough in to find an audience. And you're starting at a strange time in the spring, and it feels like we won the lottery twice.
It is
that we get to do it again.
the process, if you're developing one of these things, I for some reason was just thinking about it last night, can just be insane and demoralizing, and it as stress riddled as anybody could ever imagine. I'll leave my own personal stories on this, but I was
no don't leave them, because I think the way I always look at it is that the reason you wanted to write that show or be in that show or do that show to begin with is usually the first thing stripped away from it. It's the first part of the like everything you want in life has teeth. The thing you wanted to do from the beginning is taken away, and you find yourself in the process of why am I doing this part? And then it settles into what it's meant to be.
Well, I was sitting around last night, in that case, I was thinking about doing a sitcom, a single camera sitcom for, I think it was ABC.
No.
It was Pam Adlon was my wife in a multicam one. That's Pam Adlon. But it was based on my movie The Hammer. And I said, like, you and this guy. And then I said, well, have as Waldo be the guy. And they were like, yeah, we can't have that guy be your sidekick in a TV show. And I said, well, we made a 90-minute movie with him, and people seem to really like him. I mean, it was like Oswaldo in The Hammer, most people's favorite part of The Hammer was that guy. And people go like, where'd you get that actor? And stuff like, I'm spreading stucco.
He was the breakout star.
So I said, I know how to work with him. I know how to use him. I know how to make it work. I figured it out. We already did it. And the good news is you have me and Kevin Hanschig. I did this movie that you like so much. With the guy who was in the part, and we know what we're doing with him, and we will make it work for 21 minutes. And they're like, yeah, we got to recast that guy. Then the odyssey began. You have to cast this guy with this thick accent who's Hispanic, but it's not going to be offensive, but he is that guy, but he's supposed to be Guatemalan, but this guy's Puerto Rican. We saw 2,000 guys.
Oh my God.
They were all wrong. None of them work. I kept saying to him, look, you're going to get some dude who does this crazy accent, but that's a character actor doing the accent. He's going to do interviews in his regular voice. Mm-hmm. It's going to be totally offensive to like the Hispanic community. They're going to be up everyone's ass, and it's not going to work. Just let us use the guy I know works, and we'll make it work.
You're trying to find a version of this guy who you have. You have this guy in the palm of your hand.
We sold them the sitcom based on the movie that they loved with this guy in it. They kept saying no. We auditioned 2,000 guys. We got down to like a table read. They finally landed on one guy who was way too young and like Puerto Rican and a little redheaded. And
perfect.
And
Blake Griffin.
It was like 3 days before we were shooting.
Oh my gosh.
And we did a table read for the network, and we were done with the table read. Everyone left, and like the studio heads like stayed behind, and they said, we loved it, everything, and all the jokes were great. Everything was great, except for the guy who played Ozzy. He was wildly offensive with that accent. Yeah. We're going to get our asses handed to us if that young guy comes in and puts on that comical Senior Wences kind of accent. Okay. Can you coach him up? And I was like, the thing you can't tell these assholes is, hey, assholes, I've been saying this the entire time. This is exactly all I've been saying for 3 months, and here we are. And because TV guys are assholes and they're arrogant, they go to you and go, hey, we got a problem. This is an offensive stereotype of a Latino. And I'm like, that's all I've been saying. That's all I've been saying. And they go, can you coach him up? And I said, when are we taping? In 2 days? Like, I'll try. And then I like sat with the guy, and I tried for a few hours, and it was just clear. It's like it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. And then I called the head of the network. I didn't go through protocol.
I jumped the line.
I didn't talk to our producers, because our producers were the ones who were trying to jam me with this 23-year-old Puerto Rican. Right. They'd been jamming me the whole time, and eventually I had to go over them and talk to the head chick over there and just go, I'm going over your head because these people keep trying to jam me. I've been saying this wasn't going to work for months. I need you to okay us getting my guy in. And
she said, how'd you get this number?
Then I got a call from our producers.
Oh no,
how dare you go above us and go straight to the network. And I said, I went above you because I've been telling you for 3 months you weren't listening, and now we have 48 hours to put somebody in this role. I then got the word that the main man was livid. I was talking to one of his lieutenants.
Who's the main man in this case? Is he a producer on the show?
Don't make him say, because he has a great comedy for next year.
I don't know the name. Is he with Network, or is he with the show, or
What's the title of the main man? I don't even know.
He's the main man. Okay. He's producing, and I tell this person to tell him to go fuck himself.
Perfect.
Because he's livid. What do you think I've been going through for 3 months? And now we're jammed with this guy that's not working. And so we got Ozzy in. And then, of course, that's my last exchange with them. Their whole side of it.
Right.
Tell them to both go F themselves, all the producers, whatever. And then 2 days later, it's 6 a.m. and we're filming. And they're all just sitting there. Oh, and it's got to be the worst environment. You couldn't picture a worse environment
for comedy
than trying to do that.
Exactly. But that's not just to go to work, but to be funny at work.
That's, and they're all sitting there staring in Video Village at a monitor, and you're trying to hit your marks and your lines, and your head's going a million miles an hour. But that's the process, as I understand it.
Yeah, the show's its 8th season. It's coming back in June.
I wish. I'm so glad to share that story. Can I share an old Adam Carolla story, like a 20-year-old Adam Carolla story?
Please.
By all means.
Because,
hashtag me too.
No, it is.
Time's up on this guy.
I'm really happy to say I don't have any me too Adam Carolla story. In that story of when you call the head honcho of the network and he's so mad at you, Adam's reaction is, how do you think I feel? And he's right over, why is your annoyance less than my annoyance?
Valid, yeah.
I've been annoyed for 2 months. And as the little funny actor on any show, I would have been like, oh God, now I've tanked it. We're all going to lose our jobs. It's over. It's done. 20 years ago, in between episodes of Loveline, we're sitting on a couch one day making $3 for MTV. And Adam and I were both 16 at the time, so we were both auditioning for movies. So I had whatever audition I had, and he had whatever his... I don't know if we were in the same place or the same parking lot or something, but you're telling the story, and he says, I went in there, and they made me wait for like 15 minutes. And I'm already like, 15 minutes? That was really an atrocity. It's like a Holocaust. And he's like, so I got up and left. He's like, and then they were calling, and they were calling my agent, and they were calling my people, and I was like, no, you wasted my time. And I'm sitting there, my jaw's on the floor, like, I waited an hour.
to get this gig.
And I stayed.
And I don't think I even got the part. You probably got the
part.
No, I was on the commercial.
And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, you're never going to work as an actor.
It's true. Like, well, that part was right.
This is not going to fall. Like, but I don't know.
Well, here's what I started to realize that two things from like going on auditions. I'd walk into the room, there'd be 12 people sitting in the room, and I'd go, what time was your call time? They go, 1 p.m. And I go, what about you? 1. What about you? 1. I told me 1. Why'd they tell 12 of us 1 o'clock? Like, why didn't they stagger this out a little bit? And then I realized, because they didn't care.
They didn't care. It's not important. We're cattle, and just wait there in the herd.
They're basically, it's like when you're driving along the L.A. freeways and it's raining outside and the sprinklers are running on the side of the freeway, and you go, what are they running? They're telling me to conserve water, and they're running their sprinklers. It's pouring outside, and the answer is, don't care.
Yep.
Not their money. Doesn't really bother them. Like, when you remove the don't care part of it, people can be a little insensitive. And so my thing was like, they should tell people to show up at 12 and then 12:10 and then 12:20. But it's a safer world for them just to go, everyone show up at 1. And I realized these people had to like leave their jobs as waiters and waitresses and drive from Santa Monica into the valley and whatever. And they didn't care. Mm. And that's when I started thinking, not for me, but for my brethren.
I'm going to make a stand. I'll wave this flag.
I'm going to take a stand by standing and leaving.
Standing and leaving.
Who's with me?
I was standing.
I once said, it's such a weird memory. I had two weird memories. One was, I was a whole group of people in that room again, and I said to everyone, like, what time? What time did everyone hit? 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock. And I go, what time is this? 1:40. And I could hear them in the other room, like laughing and
socializing.
I could hear the sound of Pringles being consumed. Like they were sitting around, like you could like shooting the shit and eating and go like, are you going to finish that half? I'll take a pastrami. Like they were just eating and hanging out. I knew they realized we're just sitting there, but where are we going to go? We're desperate, poor, needy, whatever.
They're the gatekeepers.
I said to everyone, I said, let's all get up right now and leave. Let's all get up and leave. Let's just stand up and leave. And they're like, I don't think so. I said, look, none of us are going to get the part. Statistically, none of us are going to get the part.
Right.
Let's just get up and leave. Like, let's just send a message.
There's a cuckoo's nest moment.
Yes, you said 1 o'clock. It's 1:40. Fuck you. We're all just leaving. Let's just get up and leave. And then I said, I'll sweeten the pot. I said, I'll buy ice cream for everybody in this room.
Oh, my God, you really did this?
I did. I said, we should just get up and we should just leave. And one guy just went, yeah, that's easier for you to say. You have two jobs. I was on Loveline and Man Show at that time.
That's why you can afford the ice cream.
You're rich. You have two jobs on TV. And I was like, true.
You got me there.
But there's still your dignity. Right? And they're like, no. We're staying put.
That guy's like, I moved here from New York City and left my family and free food and an apartment and I live in a car. And no.
Yes. I could have had free ice cream.
That was John Cena.
There was another guy. There's another time when Jimmy and I were like auditioning for things that I was like, what do me and Jimmy need to audition for? We just tell them, here's what we want to do and you should let me and Jimmy do this show. And they're like, no. And at a certain point they said, here's how we're doing it. You guys exit, and then you enter the room. You enter, re-enter the room, and then do your skit or whatever it is, and then we'll see. That'll be like an audition. And we left the room, and I was like, let's never come back. Let's never come back. Like, they're like, go out, you know, just spend 5 seconds and then knock and enter the door. And I said, fuck these people. Let's just leave. Let's just go now. Like, we will leave and we'll just go. We'll just keep going and they'll just sit in the room waiting for us and we'll just.
Maybe they're still there today.
We'll just be gone.
No way, Jimmy, be on board. I can't wait to hear the answer.
Jimmy's a much, well, the reason he hosts the Oscars and I host the podcast is because he's a little bit better at following instructions than I am.
All right. So he made his day.
He did. But okay. I don't think we got the spot anyway. I'll tell you guys, this half of the show brought to you by Black Tux. Go to blacktux.com/Adam. I'll tell you about that. Tommy John, wearing them right now. You get the 20% off. And LifeLock, LifeLock.com. And TrueCar, TrueCar.com. So, Dan, I apologize. I've not seen the show. I didn't know you were on it. Now I'm in. Now I'm DVRing.
All right, now I have to go through the whole 20-year thing. Because
please.
Adam has now grown into a totally honest person. I was so excited to give you crap because I knew you would never have watched the show, but I thought you would fake it. But no,
I didn't.
Here we are.
I didn't watch a lot. I have not watched a lot of network lately. I then found out Diane Farr was coming on, and I thought, oh, good, but that's as far as I got with it. And then earlier this morning, I said, what is she plugging? And they said, it's her ABC sitcom, single camera sitcom, Tuesdays 9:30. Tickled pink to know that it's picked up for a second. Glad to know that Jenna Fisher's on it from the office. And what else are we missing?
Oliver Hudson and Bobby Lee, who you probably know, who's amazing.
Sure.
And I love him. And Lindsay Price, who's the most beautiful, funny woman on earth. So it's a beautiful, it's fun. It's a really good job. It's a really good time. The episode tonight is spectacular. It's my favorite of the season. So maybe you want to give that one.
I will watch. And people know you from our movie, Road Hard, which I had a great time working with Dan on.
Same thing.
And Rescue Me as well. Dennis Leary. Difficult, complex. He likes you. He strikes me. Tell me if this is right. Bill Maher, if he likes you, is great. And if Bill Maher doesn't like you, then that's a very difficult time you're going to have with Bill Maher. And I feel like Dennis Leary, I'll add Dennis Miller to that pile, too. Like
Prager?
Not Prager.
Okay.
Miller and Leary, I feel like if those guys like you, it's great. And if they don't, that's going to be a tough set.
Okay, I will say there's some truth in that, but I would say it's a little bit deeper on both ends. If Dennis Leary likes you, he's the greatest damn friend you ever want. Like, he's super loyal. It's everything you want from your Irish Boston firefighter. He's your teammate. Like, loyalty runs super deep. And if he doesn't like you, you're going to know it. It's not like it's going to be unclear. I felt like we both worked with Bill Maher on Love Line, and we weren't allowed to touch him, and we weren't allowed to. There was all these rules, and it was cold, but you still got this sort of kind of white collar, hey, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't think you get that so much in the Boston crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the fold or you're not, but he's lovely. He's a good guy. If he likes you.
Well, it's easy to like. Dan, I think, was the second to last Love Line female host we had. I can't remember if you were second to last.
I think the only one after me was Catherine. So
she was last. You were second to last.
Yeah.
We had quite a few. We had like Chris Magaha.
You had a whole bunch who were like Vanna White.
How
Whites,
about leaving
though?
The jokes to Adam?
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
It's like, oh.
That's
Keitlinger.
Yep. Laura Keitlinger. Yeah. Yeah, well, it was one of those many producer things where when we started the show, there's an IMDb page with everyone on it.
Oh, look at that.
Lou Thornton? Don't remember her.
Who's
Carmen
Electra?
Donna
Dierico?
Oh, come
from
on.
Baywatch and Playboy. We had her on the other day.
Really?
Yeah. Well, she probably did some of that.
Oh my God! What the fudge?
Hold on. Some of these names are like one and done things.
Yeah,
that are little
I'm like,
stunt casting, like Carmen Electra and stuff like that. I don't think she did it that long.
But I didn't mean what was Donna. I meant what was Donna. What's the show in Times Square?
I have no idea.
It might have been a one off.
That is a very good question.
Because it's in the same time as Catherine.
So what I did was when we were going to MTV, they said we need to put some cute chick up there to sit next to you. And I was like, that's a bad idea. And they're like, why? And I said, because we do the show together every night. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, well, where's the cute chicks? And I said, well, book cute chicks as guests or have them in the audience asking questions or like round it out some other way. But don't just stick someone between us. We've been together for years.
Yeah.
We have a rapport. And you're just going to take some cute chick and they'll go, oh, no, we'll get someone who's really funny or whatever. And like really attractive and really funny, too. And I was like, yeah, it's not an indictment on them. Right. It's just you can't take a 26-year-old and shove her in between us and expect the rhythm to work. And they're like, we know what we're doing.
Right. Lucille Ball is hilarious, but it wasn't Martin and Lewis and Lucille Ball who would have been able to mess up the chemistry.
And Lucille Ball was Lucille Ball. Like, this is Chris McGaha. Yeah. So they're like, they just put her between us.
This is Lucille Ball of Loveline host. If you let me finish.
Oh, sorry. And we endured a year of it not working very well. And then we were done. They do what producers do. I was like, well, that didn't work. And they're like, you're right. It didn't work. And I'm like, I will accept my apology in the form of an edible arrangement. And they're like, oh, no, we're not apologizing. We got the wrong chick.
Oh.
And I'm like, no, no, no. The rhythm is wrong. You can't put someone in between us. Just let us do our thing and put the gals out in the audience or have them as guests. And they're like, we're moving on to our next girl. Then the next girl. Mm. Now, the thing that's great about producers is they can say with a straight face when the season's over, yeah, the girl didn't work out. And I'm like, yes, that's what I said before we started the show. Then we went to our third, and then our fourth, and we just keep going. Now, Diane did work, because I feel like she brought something intellectually to the thing. And Diane actually was one that we gelled with, and then one who sort of left on her own accord.
Always the way.
We drove her out.
Oh, you're lovely. She left on her own accord with the lovely litigation agent, litigation lawyer.
She worked.
I love how you just put that, because I kept saying in the beginning it was so hard, because I'm like, they're like a married couple. They do this every day. Like, I'm the menage a trois who's not getting any. Like, nobody's, you don't need a third person here. But yeah, then we found a way. It's kind of lovely.
Yes, I agree. And we've been friends ever since. And co-stars ever since. You can see our movie, Road Hard. I think it's on Amazon Prime.
If you want to
enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And it's always good. Diane's just a fine person and a fine actress. And I'm glad I didn't harass you sexually.
You definitely didn't. I don't think I fell into your type.
I could have. I was probably just tired by the end of the week. Yeah. We'd tape on Fridays. I'd be doing Loveline all week. That was always my busiest day was Friday. That's why I was always ready to tell Drew to get going.
Too exhausted.
Were you there when he had his panic attack?
Wait a sec, though. Let me go back 1 second. We used to do, it's insane when I think about it now. We would do 4 shows on a Thursday and 4 shows on a Friday, and you guys worked Sunday through Thursday night together.
Yeah.
So by Friday, you were like two sorority girls at each other's throats. Like, you were done.
I was done with Drew.
8 episodes sitting on the couch and 4 others. And we would do 100 episodes in a season.
Well, I got mad at Drew because...
You haven't spoken since.
I got mad at Drew because after season 1 or maybe season 2... I said, I need more money. I'm doing an hour of content a night. We don't have writers or anybody. Mm. We don't have a room
support
of writers.
Staff.
Who's doing an hour-long nightly TV show with no writing staff? I should be getting more money. I wasn't getting much. Drew and his people told me to be quiet. Everyone told me to be quiet. And I said, screw it. I'm not being quiet. I want more money. So I got my money doubled, and then I got Drew's money doubled.
Oh, boy.
When he was the one telling me, don't do it. But I got his money doubled. And then I would always get mad at him because I was like, we're getting paid the same. I got your money doubled. And I'm the one who has to read the bios and interview the bands and whatever. And Drew would just sort of sit around, you know, talking on his phone or whatever. And then when the show would start, he'd just go out there and sit down. And I'd realize I'm doing 4 shows a day. I got like a bunch of bios and stuff in front of me, the rap groups I'd never heard of and all that kind of stuff. And I remember one time Drew went... It was like show 3 on a Friday or something. And we had like, you know, Mac Ken or some rapper or something. And Drew went, I agree with, and he looked at the person. Oh, and he clearly didn't know their name. Gosh. He didn't know the guest on his show's name. And he just went, I agree with
our guest.
And then he turned back around. And I was like,
helpful.
Yeah, I said, well, you gotta read the bios too, because I'm left out there to just do all the peddling out there, and you're not doing anything. And he didn't care.
Okay, wait a minute, though. In fairness, your resentment was a little obvious, because there was this one time where you and Drew, oh my God, I'm gonna bury the lead on this so badly. It's the funniest, meanest thing I've ever heard you do. You were on stage before a Korn concert.
Yeah.
And Drew's three beautiful, stunning triplets came out, and you told everyone they were Hanson.
Yes.
Into the microphone. That's awesome. At a Korn
pretty
concert.
Good. Pretty good.
That's awesome.
It was funny. Chris Maxipata says Guar.
Yeah, even, I've heard this story. I think it was Guar.
Well, even Giovanni will do it.
Even better.
We were in like San Luis Obispo at one of our affiliate stations, and we were playing this like 15,000 seat amphitheater, and Drew had brought his triplets, who at the time were seven.
Yeah, little guys.
And they're all beautiful little blondes. And Drew, I just remember he brought them with us, and we're there just to bring out Guar or you know, Limp Bizkit or something.
Something rough.
and Drew, like, we would stand in the wings, and Drew never cared. He didn't prepare. He didn't do anything. I didn't really do anything. And we're just standing there, and Drew said, I want to bring my kids out on stage with us. They were backstage, side stage with us. And I was like, oh, yeah, bring them on. And he said, can we just bring them out? Like, could I go out? And give them the thrill of walking out in front of 15,000 people. And I said, yeah, let's do it. And I wasn't really thinking about it. But it was a time when, like, Hanson hatred was up there with disco hatred in the 70s, and everyone was playing Korn and Limp Bizkit as a response
right,
to Hanson.
Right, the St. Cloud Posse.
And so we went out there first, and Drew's like, can I bring him out? I was like, yeah, let's bring him out. And he's like, I got special guests to bring out. Come on, guys. And they all come running on stage. I said, ladies and gentlemen, Hanson. And everyone just... In response to me yelling Hanson, just started booing and throwing things, you know, like
three children.
And so they're all coming out on stage into an amphitheater, 15,000 people going, no, you die.
You suck.
So for the not reading the bios, it's a little uneven. Adam had to do a little more work at Loveline, and he crucified Drew's children publicly.
Definitely trauma. Definitely trauma. And it's also one of those things where you don't realize, but if you go like, hey man, who wants to get high? You'll get 50,000 people go like, whoa! And then you go, and then you go, Ronald Reagan, everybody go, you can just like yell out words that, and they'll just start booing or something. When I yelled Hanson, they all just booed. It was a wall of boos. All right.
Lovely.
Now I'll tell you about this. Sorry, I forgot about that. I believe it was San Luis Obispo, but we'll figure it out. The Black Tux. Wedding season upon us. You're going to be invited to all your buddies' weddings. How about theblacktux.com? Awesome suits and tuxedos to all kinds, all different kinds of styles for all different kinds of events. You just rent them online. I rented one for the Oscars and wore it proudly to the Oscars this year. Not to the Oscars, to the back of the Oscars where I sat in a weird corral and tried to write jokes for 3 hours. Free home try-ons. You can see the fit and the feel and the quality of your suit months before the event. After ordering, your suit will arrive 14 days before the event, so you get to shake it all out, as they say in the car world. Test it, take it for a test drive, make sure everything fits. If not, we got plenty of time to get it fixed before the big event. If anything is less than perfect, they'll send you out a replacement right away. Just send it back 3 days after your event. Ship it in the same box. That's what we did. Keep that box. Super convenient. Super easy. Free shipping both ways. It is the Black Tux. How about it, Dawson?
To get $20 off your purchase, visit theblacktux.com/Adam. That's theblacktux.com/Adam for $20 off your purchase. The Black Tux. Premium rental suits and tuxedos delivered.
All right. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back and do the news right after this.
Adam Carolla, not Taco Bell material.
The reason the show is called Not Taco Bell Material is because I attempted to get a job at the Taco Bell in North Hollywood that was by my house, and they said, thanks, but no thanks. We're looking for a slightly higher caliber of retard.
May 17th at Cleveland's Agora Theater, and May 18th in Detroit at the Royal Oak.
Now I'm out on my own, and I've moved on to the fast-paced, lucrative world of carpet cleaning, where a high school diploma will only slow you down, people.
Adam Carolla, not Taco Bell material. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, soon you won't have to go to Vegas to visit a sports book. The Supreme Court has declared the federal ban on legalized sports betting unconstitutional, according to ESPN.
What a day.
You are so happy.
What a day.
The ruling strikes down a 1992 law that made it illegal for states other than Nevada to allow wagering on individual games or events. The suit brought by the state of New Jersey began in 2012. Experts believe that 32 states will likely allow sports betting within the next 5 years.
Oh, my God. There's like mini mafia people with a sports book all over the country celebrating today.
Yeah, they're going to be.
No, they're not celebrating.
They're going to be enraged. They're out of work.
It's
going to
go corporate big time.
They're going to be out of work like Mexican drug cartels bringing you know, they had to shift from weed to basically heroin because whenever it gets illegal, now the black market's gone. I'm glad. Bigger picture. I was saying to someone who asked me this morning, I had never thought, I didn't know about this news. So I was doing some radio this morning, sports radio, and they kept asking, hey, what about this? You know, my answer is, I don't like it when the government regulates things that we need to regulate within ourselves because it weakens our regulation mode, which is ultimately, it's going to be up to you how much alcohol you consume. Now, how much weed you consume.
How much you beat your kids.
How much you beat your kids. Yeah. How much gambling on sports you do. Ultimately, that's kind of going to be up to you. Like, you need to go, look, I don't make a ton of money and I have some responsibilities financially, but I'll put $10 down on the Super Bowl once a year, no problem. But if I quit my job and I'm living at the track, now we have an issue.
That's good, yeah.
And it's the same way with junk food. It's the same way with booze. There's nothing that can stop me from driving through every fast food In-N-Out Burger or Taco Bell or wherever the drive-through. But I'm left on my own to kind of regulate myself, and we all have to do it with gambling, and you do it with everything. But you think, I'd like to gamble. I'd like to put a lot of food, but you have to kind of regulate yourself. And when the government gets involved, then it just becomes their job to regulate you, and I think you lose some of those
skills.
So I like it, which is, hey, this is legal, just like booze is legal, just like pot's legal, just like junk food's legal, just like whatever, skydiving's legal. It's all things you could possibly hurt you or hurt your family, but you can ride a motorcycle if you want, but here, act accordingly. You do?
I got a motorcycle last year as part of my midlife crisis.
Nice. What'd you get?
A Ducati.
Oh, which one?
The Scrambler, an 800.
That's a fair amount of CCs for a young lass like yourself.
I know, which is quite the crowd pleaser when driving around on the road. People, they spend all their time because you have a helmet on. It's like you're kind of a space alien, but they're looking at your legs and your boots like, I think that's a girl. I think that's a kind of slight girl on that motorcycle.
Yeah. How fast can you get around town in that thing?
I waited a year before I went on the freeway, but I've had it up to 85.
But you can cut through everything in those, right?
It's like if you've ever done the free pass at Disneyland, it's having the free pass for Los Angeles. You never wait. You can park anywhere you want. You can get anywhere you want. And part of the reason why I did it was just to be present at something. You have to be super present or you're going to die. It's the only time you're in a video game. You're exactly in the video game and nothing can get at you. And Dennis Leary, of all people, was the only one. When people are like, oh, you drive a motorcycle, he was the only one that said, what are you doing? You have children. Like, you're not allowed to have that kind of fun anymore. And I was like, you know, every guy I know who's in the middle of their midlife crisis buys an Aston Martin or buys a Maserati. And that's like a year of college for one of my kids. My motorcycle cost the same as a weekend in New York. Really wasn't that expensive. Plus, I had to take a class to get the license. And at the end of the day, yeah, we're all pushing our mortality. That's the basis of the midlife crisis.
I bless
it. Fun.
I rode a motorcycle everywhere in this town as my only form of transportation for years.
And to and from the auditions, you'd leave early?
Construction sites. You can get around so goddamn fast. The only problem is you start pushing it a little bit.
That's my jihadi right there.
Do people ever ride on the back?
I've never put anyone on the back because here's the only thing I'll admit, and I hope no one chastised me for it. I have dropped the bike several times. There's a difference between crashing the bike and dropping the bike. Dropping it is I'm going between 1 and 3 miles an hour. I'm going in the driveway. I get a little nervous, and a Ducati has a huge turning range. It's like a motor. It's like a bicycle. The turning range is so big. And if I drop it, I'm dead. I can't pick it up. And the reason I got a Ducati, I went brand by brand by brand. Ducatis are 100 pounds lighter than every other 800 on the market. The Triumph, forget Harleys. It was so much. It wasn't that I wanted a racing bike. I just needed the thing I had the best shot of controlling up if I was starting to lose it. So
now, what do you mean the turning radius of a bicycle?
Because if you sit on a Triumph, the way the tank is and the way the neck of the bike is, it'll turn about this far. A Ducati, the way it's, because it's a racing bike, it turns this far.
Oh, you can turn it that much.
So I can turn it almost on myself.
The radius is much
tighter. And the physics get me every time. We live in a hilly area. I've dropped it twice getting into my driveway. Can you imagine how embarrassing it is when my nanny has to come running out and I'm in like full racing gear and I'm like, I can't pick up my motorcycle. And then I feel like a loser, like I should not be riding if I can't pick the instrument up.
The bikes, when you get really slow, get unwieldy. When you get moving, very gyroscopic and move very easily to the point where you don't even have to steer. You just kind of lean. Mm-hmm. But at really slow, what ends up happening, the reason I think where people dump bikes is they get going really slow. And they start turning, and they stab the front brake a little. They grab the front brake and it jams a little bit, and then you always dump on that move.
It could be. I've done it so many times. I don't really have the answer, if I'm honest. But I think what happens is you don't realize how much you have to counter lean. If I'm turning left, if I don't go this way, the whole thing's going. It's a physics problem. And I've done it 4 freaking times. And then you have to replace the hands and the feet. I've broken them all.
You break the pegs.
Yeah.
You can break the shift levers. Yeah. You can break the clutch and the brake. Lever. They're aluminum normally. They hang out a little past the handlebars, and when you fall, they just snap, which is probably designed to be sort of breakaway so they don't tear the whole mechanism up.
I think
up.
It's designed so that you never hurt the tank, because if you hurt the tank now, the bike's really in trouble.
I told this. Well, I didn't tell Diane, but I'll tell you in a second. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John celebrating 10 years of excellence. Over 5 million pairs sold. More than 500,000 guys like me. I'm wearing them right now. Everybody wears them around here. I don't think there's anyone who's not made the switch to Tommy John
including
around
me.
Here.
They have women's now, and it's fantastic.
They're just the best. Tom Patterson, the guy who invented Tommy John, was a normal guy. He was frustrated by the fit and the feel of his underwear, so he did something about it. Proprietary fabrics, innovative designs, legs never ride up or roll up, waistbands never roll down, impossible to get a wedgie. My buddy Ray could try.
Succeed.
He says he could try. Plus, time-saving, horizontal quick-draw fly, life-changing, man. All backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guarantee. It's Tommy John. No adjustment needed. Dawson.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
I sold my Ninja to a guy, and out of the recycler, when I was about 24, and then he crashed it on the way home.
No.
And then he pushed it back to my house, and he said, I don't want it.
No.
Yeah.
Funny, and
you're 24, you can't even give him back his money. Like, it's not like you have a way to be like, oh, that's okay.
Why would you?
I did have a way, because I was holding his money, standing in the driveway holding his money. And I felt bad for the guy, but I was like, if you don't want your motorcycle, then you need to sell your motorcycle, because it's yours. And he's like, I just don't want it. Anymore. Like, he was so freaked out. And so I said, I'll take it and I'll sell it and I'll fix it. And
Oh my gosh.
I didn't give him his money back. I said,
You gave him the money from when you sold it after the fixing it?
I literally took it. It had the broken off peg, but the shifter still worked. So I just had my foot kind of like floating in the air, and I took it to a motorcycle repair shop. They fixed it. I think they charged like $100. You know, this is 1987 or something. They charged like $100. They fixed it. I got home and my phone rang again, because it was back when you'd sell something in the recycler, it would just be in the newspaper for a week.
Yeah.
So you'd get the early calls like Thursday night when it came out, but you might get a call on a Saturday going, hey man, you still got the bike for sale? And I was like, I do have the bike still for sale. And he's like, all right. And he basically paid that guy what he paid me minus the $100 or whatever. Everything worked out. The guy sold the bike. I resold it for him, got it repaired.
And I'm so impressed with you. This is awesome. What I meant was, like, if you were my age and this kid broke it, I'd be like, all right, here's your money. I'll start all over again. But I was like, at 24, you'd never have that. But
already spent the money like a truck. Like, I needed a pickup truck. But I felt bad for him, because he was like a heap. He didn't want to ride the bike anymore, and he was at my house. He pushed it back to my rented house. I was like, I felt bad, but I didn't want to give him his money back, because then I'd just have a broken bike. So I took it to be repaired, and I just gave him his money back after someone else bought it.
Every time I've dropped a bike, I want to throw it in the garbage. Like, if I could leave it right where I dropped it and just walk away and pretend it never happened. Mm-hmm. One time there was a fire truck on the other side of the street in Los Feliz. I dropped it trying to turn into a driveway to park with some mom and a stroller coming by who all just wanted to look at the motorcycle for a second. I was like, no, and it was down on the ground before I knew what was happening. And then the bike is on and it's making noise and it's uncomfortable. And I know I can't pick it up. And I've spent thousands of dollars at the chiropractor trying to wedge the 400 pounds up. And a couple of firemen came over. They're picking it up for me, and they're holding it, and they're chatting, and I'm like, just take it. I don't want it.
Hey, rescue me.
I had the helmet on that I didn't take off, because I didn't want them saying, we saw that girl for rescue me, and she can't hold up her own motorcycle.
All right, what else you got, Gina Graham?
Well, experts say that women are more likely to have an orgasm if they blow their nose before having sex. Women with the sharpest sense of smell were up to 6 times more likely to climax. They're more sensitive to body odors and hormones, which trigger arousal. Psychotherapist Philip Hodson added, quote,
wait, are they pheromones or hormones? In the smelling.
I thought there were pheromones, but this says body odors and hormones.
Yeah.
They're keeping it simple for us. He said the findings suggest that a head cold and a blocked nose may make arousal more difficult. Clearing the nose may be a useful strategy.
Hold on.
All right.
We all know when you got that head cold and you're trying to enjoy a meal, it's like not enjoyable,
bland,
right?
Yeah.
Like, can turn whatever your favorite Thai food into next to nothing, right?
So just egg noodles.
We're kind of going down that path.
Wait a second.
Well, I'm just saying,
I know where this is.
Everything is a little less when you have that stuffed up nose, right? Isn't everything kind of diminished?
Sucks. Yeah, of course.
Like, so you say you have this stuffed up nose, you're probably not going out to the bar to hook up for the, like,
right?
Like, orgasm falls back further on the list with the head cold.
Totally,
anyway.
Totally.
I'm saying everything's enjoyed less with a head cold.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch something on TV, when you watch a movie, you can't hear it as well, and when you eat something, it doesn't taste as good.
That's
like
true.
You're dull.
Or if you have that head cold, Diane, going in the bar and you can't smell anything, hook up with an Indian guy, cross it off your bucket list.
You know? Oh, how dare
please,
you!
Please, Brian. My my God.
I just don't like the idea that they're saying in order for women to have better orgasms, you must blow your nose. It's hard enough for most women to have an orgasm.
Yeah,
but like, don't tell me that to the blowing my nose was the problem.
But Chris, you might be able to find this because I swear we've done a story before where there was a link between ED medicine and it was originally supposed to be a cure for sinus blockage for men. So there's definitely something there between the nose and the erogenous zones. We've done that story. I know we have something to that effect.
What do you think about this theory? Do you think women are more tuned in to the pheromone musk and whatever department? So we've figured out, and we can all agree that men are more aesthetically oriented.
Sure.
So if we are more aesthetically oriented, then where are the other paths in this? And I would argue that maybe you guys are a little more tuned in to that.
Smell sensitive.
Yeah, I don't mean smell, but just the invisible stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think women are more tuned into the emotional side of things as far as attraction goes. But if it's the smell thing, we're in trouble. Because generally speaking, if you put a man and a woman on an island, the smells that are going to come out of the man over time are so much worse than the smells that are going to come out of the female.
How dare you.
So we're doomed over time. Like, even like away, like on a cruise for a week, and just hearing the noises and the smells and the sounds that come out of men's bodies, I'm like, wow, we are really different species.
Do you guys want to put this theory to the test?
We're going on a cruise. That's right.
In September 14th to the 17th, Seattle to Victoria, BC.
Just booked Diane Farr at the main
Oh, my God. She's doing Soma a lecture on hormones and pheromones.
Yeah.
That's going to be good. So this did seem at first like a good Germany or Florida news story, but there were so many great details in it. I'm just going to have to just read it as it is and forego the game. A Florida man recently tried.
Florida.
Excuse me?
I'm guessing Florida.
You're very good at this. Okay. A Florida man recently tried to hide his legless fugitive girlfriend by stuffing her in a plastic bin. Christy Lee Anderson, who lost her legs and injuries from a 2015 gun battle with cops, was on a run after skipping out on a court date where she was standing trial for armed kidnapping and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon on a law enforcement officer stemming from the 2015 incident.
Definitely not a Jew.
Exactly. In which she held up a Burger King with a BB gun and threatened one of her relatives.
When the deputies
came knocking on her boyfriend's door, John Robert Carr Jr., he claimed she wasn't there. And then one of the officers spied him through a bedroom window, cramming the woman, who is 4 foot tall, into a plastic bin. They were both arrested.
She lost her legs in a shootout with
the cops at Burger King.
So somebody performed a massive surgery in a basement?
I'm guessing it was professionally done. I mean, with the leg loss, with the cops, but she must have then went to prison for some period of time. We got to figure out how this worked.
Yeah. Got stuffed in a rubber maid.
The losing of the legs with the shootout of the cops had to happen well before this. 2015. So she was...
They're calling her a fugitive, though, right?
Are they calling her a fugitive?
She's been on the run.
All right, then Diane is right.
Girlfriend.
Wait a minute. I know there's mafia doctors, so take a bullet out of you.
Do you think the stuffing of the woman into the bin was a spontaneous, hey, I've got an idea, or something that had been discussed,
your getaway bin?
A break glass in case of emergency, honey, we talked about that. We always knew it might come to this.
Yeah.
You know, if this had been going on for 3 years, this might be a daily habit. That might be
this is how they go food shopping.
Yeah. He just says in the bin, and she has way ahead of you. Just take me there.
Let's go out
for a stroll. Didn't Kim Basinger lose a lawsuit based on this movie, Boxing Helena?
What?
Yes, there's a landmark lawsuit.
Landmark lawsuit.
Do you remember this, Diane?
I remember the movie, but I don't remember the plot.
She had agreed to play the role of Boxing Helena or Elena, about a woman who had her legs removed and maybe arms. I can't remember. It was kept in a box.
She dismembered.
And at some point, she went, I don't think so. I'm backing out. And the producers sued her and said, hey, we'd already raised a bunch of money.
She was a big star at the time. Yeah. They used her name to secure financing.
And she had lost.
I got to see this movie.
She owned a city. She bought a city.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember that.
That's how much money she had at this time?
And I think she lost it. Like, she had a city. She lost this. The producer sued her for backing out, and she lost, like, millions of dollars to the
The
producers.
What year-ish?
When she was a big star. So
92.
Like, mid-90s.
Wow. Whatever.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Chris will look it up. But then, well, wait a minute. Chris, how does one lose their legs in a shootout with cops and is not apprehended by police? I'm assuming you have to be apprehended if the cops shoot legs out.
This is a separate incident.
Then you have to have your legs professionally removed.
There's probably
then you have to go to jail for some period of time. Then you have to get out of jail, break parole, and get shoved in a Tupperware container.
The only thing that comes to mind, which you'd think would be part of the story, was what if she was if she was kidnapped from the hospital?
No, she's the kidnapper in the story.
I've not met many people that had their legs amateurishly removed.
I'm guessing that Adam's right, that she did go to jail from the shootout, then came out and committed another crime, and she's a fugitive of the second crime.
Yeah, or sometimes...
Or just
broke parole because she didn't have an ankle to put a bracelet on.
There it is.
That's my argument. I'm her attorney. Find the whole boxing, Elena. Find out what... She owned a city or town. I don't know what the difference is.
It ended up being like Sherilyn Fenn or someone like
Sherilyn Fenn.
Yes.
Sherilyn Fenn took her place.
That's who it was. Okay.
She owned a town. She lost her town.
She lost the town.
This is a great movie. I watched that.
I think there's actually a great love story in the fact that the guy didn't run away when the cops came, went back for his legless lady.
We'll find out all about it. First, let me tell you about LifeLock. Over 1 million children were victims of identity fraud in 2017. Most common perpetrator were family friends. Isn't that sad, everybody? People ripping off your kid's identity. With no financial history, kids are susceptible to new account fraud, and they won't know it for years because they're not starting accounts. They're young kids. They won't know it till they apply for a credit card or a loan, and then by then it's too late. In today's connected world, it just takes one weak link for criminals to get in and steal your identity. New LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds Norton Security to help protect against threats to your identity and your devices you can't see or fix on your own. Let's get the best. Let's get the industry standard. Let's get what we all have. Let's get LifeLock. If you have a problem, and you're not, but if you do, their agents will work to fix it. They're the best. They're LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats you might otherwise miss. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code Adam for an additional 10% off your first year. That's promo code Adam for an additional 10% off.
Oh my God,
$8.1 million she had to pay.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything about
that's what she paid.
Imagine she owned.
Yeah, she had a bank but
she owned. What was the name of the town?
I know it was a bank in Georgia. Let me find out the town.
$8.1 million then.
Imagine,
like,
oh my God, that's twice or three times as much, and she agreed to do this movie, and it's like a weird, morbid, fucked up idea for
very
a movie, and I think
too.
She just went like, screw it, and now she had to pay $8 million bucks for that.
Okay, and then
movie.
I this is a little like Me Too sidebar, but can you imagine that if a man had quit that movie, they'd be like, oh, he has another job he has
Quiet.
To do.
Yes, that's Alec Baldwin,
Quiet.
By the way.
Her husband at the time.
Yeah. Aww. What is the name of the town the bank was in, and then that'll tell you the town she owned?
Braselton, Georgia.
I was about to say.
That's the town she owned. Now, how come you can't find anything about her owning a town?
See, in 89, she and other investors bought 1,751 acres of the town's 2,000 privately owned acres.
Oh, my gosh.
She owned half the town.
Majority owner of a town.
There you go.
Got that Batman
money. It's not any of the articles. Yeah. It's all just the bank.
Right. You know what article it's in? My goddamn brain, kid.
Yeah.
So never question me when I tell you.
I'm not questioning you.
You're questioning me.
He's trying to find supporting evidence.
He wasn't born then.
Make me right. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of data breaches, if you ate at Chili's
this
recently,
this is the problem
yes.
with these goddamn computers, because you think there's just an answer everywhere, and then you go, hey, what about this? And then they look, and they go, it's not there.
Nothing
and you go, while your weird, foggy recollection of something you saw on Entertainment Tonight in 1992 is going to trump somebody using a computer and whatever, and the answer is a lot of the time, yes. A lot of these things are like, you have to do a deeper dive, and then you find them.
Yep. Well, if you ate at Chili's recently, you may have paid for more than just your meal, because the restaurant chain was hit by a huge data breach recently. Hackers got a hold of credit card information in an incident in March or April, though Chili's just learned about it on Friday.
Oh, credit card. Yeah. Diabolical. Yeah. You guys tell me. I just saw this last night. Went to the local Middle Eastern falafel-y kind of place. Went on a run. Kids want it all. Everyone wants something different. Wife wants the falafel sandwich. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. Delicious.
Delicious. I then order a couple things I take a little umbrage with. When you do the give me the falafel sandwich and they go, what side do you want? You go, just give me the falafel sandwich. They go, it comes with fries or a salad. How about the part where you just give me the fucking sandwich? Like, is there, can we have a box? Have we figured out the part where people just want a sandwich and we don't want to carry a salad or we don't want the fries? Like, can you have some modality where people order a sandwich and we just get a sandwich? Because I feel like it works that way almost exclusively with sandwiches.
Yeah.
But they go, no, we have to include the whatever. And you're like, just give me the sandwich. I ordered the sandwich. Just give me the sandwich, whatever that costs. So then they do this one. I go, give me the pita falafel sandwich. And they go, would you like that in the wrap or with the pita? And I go, in just the pita, like a falafel sandwich.
Like they
and they
come.
Go, yeah, we don't do the falafel sandwich. We do it in a wrap.
A lavash.
You can do the lavash wrap or you can do the pita wrap. Which means we take the goddamn pita and we put all the shit on top of it. And then you can use another food and taco it over. And I'm like, why not just do it like everyone does it? Like, cut the pita in half. There's a pocket. You can put it in the pocket.
It
comes with its own pocket. Like, yeah, no. And then there's this weird part where they're confused. They're confused. They're like,
no one's
so do you want the lavash wrap or do you want it in the pita on top of the pita? And I'm like, first things first, could we coach up everybody that every place on the universe, in the universe, sells them this way?
Right.
Please let's not be confused when the person says, give me a falafel sandwich, and you're talking about putting it on top of the thing, which nobody wants
sense.
It that way.
No.
Now we can go home and dissect it and dissect it and cut it open and make it the way it should have been. And then they're like, then they're looking at you like you've invented a sandwich. Like, what?
Easy there.
You put it in? No, we don't. No, but
I guess we could do
it's
that.
It's a pocket. It's a.
It's like going home and sleeping on top of a made bed and then rolling yourself up in it. Or you could just get in the bed.
And it's also a wildly unsatisfying way to enjoy this. The pita in the pocket is the way to do it. Why can't you? If you're going to serve a falafel sandwich, why not simply do your best at serving a falafel sandwich as we know it?
Yeah.
What? Why do we have to have your spin on everything? And then how come you're confused? And then it must be every single human being who comes in here and asks for this is confused. And why not just give them what the fuck they want?
Who's going to be disappointed by that?
Yeah, nobody.
Anyway. Then I had to go home and like go to Lynette. Like, well, it's not a falafel sandwich. It's the only... I didn't screw
why
this
would
up.
You order
this is how they do it. This is how they do it. I don't know why they do it in a way nobody wants it, but this is how they do it. Yes.
You guys are not eating there tonight.
Or Chili's. Next story.
Oh, was...
Yeah.
Sorry. This just in, according to...
Geo.
it did not lessen the booze, but it still was the softest band ever me and Drew did in 1997 at
Camp Combe at the Shoreline Amphitheater.
Oh, in Mountain View.
Shoreline Amphitheater. Fiona Apple. Not
Whoa.
A hard band.
It was Fiona
a soft
Apple?
Band.
Well,
yes.
Think of how hated Hanson was if they're still booing.
Well,
Fiona
again,
Apple.
All you had to do was yell out Fiona Apple. Sorry, Hanson, and everyone booed. Fiona Apple. I miss her. 1997, Shoreline Amphitheater.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan Robbins of Naperville, Illinois, has achieved a perfect score on all three of the biggest entrance exams, the SAT, the ACT, and the PSAT. Ryan, who's a junior at Naperville North High School, studied hard, but also took time out of his schedule throughout the year to tutor students who needed it when he worked with a nonprofit called Mary Tutors. Between his studying and his teaching, Ryan was able to get perfect scores, which will certainly get the attention of universities across the country, though he hasn't picked one yet.
That's a waste of my time?
Yeah, sometimes it's a waste of your time.
Listen, I don't know how it works anymore with that hog kid who got like a 4.2
right.
and didn't get into Cal or UCLA or whatever. The readjusting of things, like when people go, oh, well, the LSATs used to be your perfect score, and then this used to be the SATs mm-hmm. used, but now there's this, or used to be a 4.0. It screws up history because mm-hmm. I can't compare what this guy's old score was to your score right. because they've changed right. the criteria.
You have a perfect 4.0, and now that's not enough.
Right.
Yeah,
SATs
used to be out of 1,600, then they changed them to 2,400. There's a third 800 portion of the test, I think it was writing, and I think they went back.
But I think they went back.
That era is like ruined because it's out of 2,400 point scale.
Yeah, I just had this conversation, I think, with Mark Garagus where he goes, you know how you take the PSATs your junior year? Nope. And then your SATs your senior? Nope.
Not really.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Well, that's what you do.
You know how you.
Well, a new survey has found that couples who have flashy weddings are more likely to get divorced. Mm-hmm. Couples who spent more than $30,000 on their big day were more likely to worry about impressing their guests and the problems that then ensue from that when compared to couples who spent less than $10,000.
That's also the old Bill Clinton thing of opportunity. Not just for cheating, but just you have the opportunity for anything.
Yeah.
The more money, the more disposable income you have for a wedding. I don't know it's so much about showing off for the guests or, I waited till I was 37 to get married and now I can, you're annoying me. I'm going to go move to another state.
So you have opportunity to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More money, more problems is what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying more money, more opportunity.
More freedom.
I'll take care of it.
You're saying I can just climb on the back of that Ducati and we can just ride until the road ended? Is that what you're saying?
Do you really think you'd be on the back if we were riding away? I kind of do.
Unfinished business, baby. You'd be wearing a shirt that says, if you can read this shirt, it means the douche fell off.
Yeah, Betty.
I'd be the douche.
That's it.
All right, let me tell you about True Car. Got to get that car insured, and you got to get that new car as well, and you got to get some True Car. MSRP, you might know what it stands for, but what does it mean? Same goes for invoice, list price, dealer price, all very confusing. Introducing True Price with True Car. Know exactly what you'll pay, including fees and accessories, before you get to the dealership. You'll lock in your true price. It's a great price because True Car shows you what other people paid for the exact same car, apples to apples, and you go pick up your car. Our own Chris Maxipata did it that way. Kalen did it that way. Certified dealers set their price competitively so they can win your business as well. So even amongst the True Car dealers, they must compete themselves. So when you're ready to buy new or you're ready to buy used, you always go with True Car and you enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Weather!
Gina Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
All right, you can check out everything Adam Carolla over at adamcarolla.com. Jeff Cesaro and Clint Howard, always entertaining Clint Howard in tomorrow as well. And the new Podcast One, or the new app we have over here, Podcast One app. Check that out. Download it at the App Store now and available on iOS and Android as well. Diane Farr splitting up together Tuesdays. It is 9:30. It's ABC. I shall be watching tonight. I already picked up for another season, so binge watch up until now, and then we'll look forward to some new ones coming up as well. I'm always happy to hear when things are going well for Diane Farr. Also, you can check out Small Town Murder at Podcast One and all the good stuff we love and all the podcasts about the super thrilling small town murders. Check that podcast out at Podcast One. Leave a nice rate and review and Apple and check it out over there as well. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Diane Farr. John Cena. That's right. Gina Grad and Mal Brian saying mahalo.
We saw that girl from Rescue Man. She can't hold up her own motorcycle.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on the Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Stand up Thursday night, Cleveland Agora Theater. Friday, Detroit Royal Oak Theater. Still tickets available for the second show in Portland, Oregon, June 9th for Adam's first stand-up special. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, Man Gary events, books, movies, and more at AdamCarolla.com.